It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. A current funding lawsuit alleges that Pennsylvania has broken its constitutional obligation to provide a thorough and efficient education. The state Supreme Court is expected to hear the case later this year. I'm joined now by phone from Washington by Cheryl Kleiman. She's staff attorney for the Education Law Center, one of the attorneys in the case. Cheryl Kleiman, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us by phone from Philadelphia is Kevin McCory, WHYY senior education writer, who is contributing to the NPR reporting project School Money, exploring how states pay for their public schools and why many are failing to meet the needs of their most vulnerable students. The series debuts next week. Kevin McCory, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We can take your email questions at ESSPGH at WESA.FM and your tweets at ESSPGH. Cheryl Kleiman, tell us about the plaintiffs in this case and what constitutes a, quote, thorough and efficient education, end quote.
Well, back in 2014, we filed a lawsuit on behalf of a number of parents, school districts, and civil rights organizations across the Commonwealth. And we were asking the court to uphold the state's constitution, and you referenced a portion of the education clause. So specifically, we're asking the court to enforce the education clause of our state's constitution, which requires the General Assembly to provide for and maintain a thorough and efficient system of education. And that's a great question about what does that actually mean? A thorough and efficient public education is one that adequately supports effective and efficient education so that all of Pennsylvania's children have an opportunity to meet state academic standards.
And Kevin McCory, as you have reported, when then U.S. Education Secretary Arne Duncan visited Pennsylvania last year, he said the children who need the most seem to be getting less, and the children who need the least are getting more and more. Explain the funding gap that he's pointing out here. How is the funding system in Pennsylvania imbalanced?
Well, essentially, Paul, Pennsylvania really relies on property taxes for the bulk of the money it spends on education. And when that happens, of course, when you are in an area that is very property rich, has wealth, that school system is going to have more money to spend on its kids and vice versa. States that, you know, tend to have more equity send more of their dollars through the capital, right? So if we have a sales tax or a personal income tax that's funding the bulk of education spending as opposed to a local property tax, really, that allows for a, you know, redistributive system that makes things more equitable. That's really how it breaks down. So the entire gambit that the current governor, Tom Wolf, has been pushing is, can we reduce property taxes while increasing some other sort of broad-based tax to bring the state's share of education from about 35% to about 50%? So 50% of all the money he wants to come from the state for education.
And Governor Wolf has, as you have pointed out, has been working to increase education funding, but he's been named a defendant in the lawsuit. He says we don't want to have a lawsuit here. What is his position in all of this?
So I think his position is, unless you want to take that, Cheryl?
No, go ahead.
Oh, his position is that this isn't for the courts to decide, that he's trying to do this, you know, through the legislature, that he feels like he was elected with a mandate to do this. And I think it just puts him in a difficult position legally to respond to this lawsuit. I think he agrees with the tenets of it, but, you know, he has his reasons for saying it's not in my best interest to allow that to move forward because I'm trying to get it done in my own way.
So Cheryl Kleiman, to the governor's point that Kevin just articulated, the governor's saying, hey, we're trying to do this through the legislature. Let us solve this problem. So why try to solve it through litigation?
We think our kids' education cannot and should not be political. It is not about who is governor or which party is in power. We are simply asking the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to uphold the Constitution. And frankly, even if the governor got all that he wanted, we are still really far from where we need to be. In 2005, the state itself calculated what it would need to ensure that all students met its own state standards. And they determined that number was $4 billion. So I think, as that number indicates, this is not a small adjustment that a couple of good years could fix. A major course correction is needed, and that's why we're asking the courts to step in.
So in an attempt to force changes at the state level and make education spending more equitable and adequate, families are taking part in this lawsuit. Kevin, one particular family that you focused on in the Philadelphia area is the Miller family. What can you tell us about them and their predicament, and how the situation they find themselves in represents one that many families in Pennsylvania face?
They really strike me as an interesting case because they've really lived both sides of this. They had lived in a wealthier district in Montgomery County, which is outside of Philadelphia, as well. And, you know, the school had great resources. The teachers there were paid better than average. They had better in track records of you know, sticking around, making gains with the students. The supplies, of course, were much, much better. The facilities were much better. And then for their own personal reasons, while they were renting in the wealthier district, as they went to buy a house, really what they could afford for the space that they wanted was in a district that was much more impoverished. And so, you know, they saw the eldest daughter go from being in a very kind of cushioned situation to being all of a sudden in a situation without those resources. And it's just so striking to talk to her. She's, you know, a 17-year-old junior in high school who's really seen both sides of this, and she's so jaded. I mean, she says, wow, you know, when I was in the predominantly white, richer district, I could just see the trajectory of my fellow classmates. They were all going to college. They all had very, you know, kind of solid track to a brighter future, and now here she is in this, you know, predominantly minority school district where the buildings are falling apart, so much so that her Spanish class during this winter doesn't have an insulated wall, and they're all running to class every day to get the blankets that the teacher's providing so that they're not shivering during class trying to learn Spanish. She's seen that all, and it's very frustrating for her, and I think she kind of concluded in the story that I wrote that, you know what, this idea of equity, it's just not going to happen. People don't It's never going to be fair for everybody. I mean, it's hard to imagine a system where it really was fair for everyone, where everyone had access to the same amount of resources, because that's really going to take some sort of commitment from everyone else to say, I'm willing to do with less, whether that's less in my paycheck or my school system.
And there was actually a lawsuit along these lines in the 90s. What can you tell us about that, Kevin?
So in that case, the judge ruled that there's no way to say what's their own efficient because we don't know what the standards are. And so the difference in this case that Cheryl's now bringing is they're saying, hey, look, we have state standards. We have state tests that we say, you know, you have to, or at least it was postponed recently, but you have to pass this test in order to graduate high school. So if you have all that stuff codified within the system, they argue, then sure, you can say what a thorough and efficient education is. And if clearly there are large segments of the student body across the state who aren't able to perform at this level, they argue that, well, that means that you need to provide more resources and supports to help to make that happen. So we'll see if the judge, you know, accepts that line of argument. But Cheryl, you can probably lay that out better than I can.
Well, I would echo what you were saying, Kevin, that obviously in today's world of high-stakes testing, things are drastically different than what the court was facing in the late 90s. The state has now adopted its own strict academic standards, including the PSSAs and Keystone exams. So we're really not asking the court to change its decision from 1999. We are showing that the court now has measurable standards that they can use. And frankly, our students can't wait any longer. As Kevin describes, there are real students behind these numbers when we talk about school funding and budgets. And the state has consistently failed to meet its basic responsibility to these students.
And what else is important to point out in terms of the politics and the effects here? One of the things that you make clear to people through the portrayal in your story, Kevin, of the Miller family, is this sort of catch-22 that when you base education funding on property taxes, if you are in a neighborhood where they're, you know, that's not doing as well as maybe a more affluent neighborhood, it puts more of a burden on people that are property owners.
That's right. So, like for the Millers, for instance, their property bill is higher than other districts that you know would maybe be rated better in a school rating system. So it's really frustrating for them to know that their bills keep going up to be able to pay for this still inadequate education, and that's a big frustration to them. It's a frustration to, I think, the impoverished districts and the really stressed districts across the state, and that's why there's this push to, okay, can we have a more redistributive system that the state takes on, you know, a bigger share of the funding to do these things. So, you know, just there's this debate in present moment of how we're going to divide new education funding. And, you know, at the very least, everybody right now has agreed that we should have this formula that should be student-weighted and that, you know, districts with more students with more needs should get more money. It seems like that should have been an easy answer years and years ago, but for some reason it wasn't codified into law until just this year. But that said, that's still only the new money. So all the old money, the large bulk of the money that's spent on education in Pennsylvania, goes through this old system, which is really just, hey, how much money did you get last year? Doesn't matter how many students you have in your district. Doesn't matter if they're in poverty. It doesn't matter if they're still learning English. So there's, like, you know, these vast inequities built into the bulk of the money that is being driven out from the state. And so over time, as the you know, the new money, quote unquote, increases, that will become a larger share of the money schools get. But that's going to take years, decades, for that really to be laid out in a way that's going to make a huge difference.
The Education Rights Now Network, an education advocacy group, says on Twitter, "Our politicians have been given enough time. Our children are suffering, and the courts must intercede." Cheryl Kleiman, we're down to about 30 seconds here. If you win this case, what will the state and the legislature be forced to do?
Well, first, we have an opportunity to go to trial and show the evidence that the state is failing to meet its constitutional obligations. And then we're asking the court to declare that the current system of funding does not comply with our state constitution. We're asking the court to order the General Assembly to cease using this current funding system and create and maintain a constitutional funding system that enables all students to meet academic standards.
And we have come to time, but I want to thank both of our guests, Cheryl Kleiman, staff attorney for the Education Law Center, and Kevin McCory, the senior education writer for WHYY. Thank you both for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Essential Pittsburgh, what is socialism? A big question and a big discussion coming your way. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.